right, it's Monday. It is April 10th, and we are beginning Fantasy Week 2 of 26. We're almost done, Heath. Time flies.
Football is right around the corner.
Football is always right around the corner, it seems. NFL draft coming up soon. Hooray. Heath is in some kind of Monday mood today, but not like the bad Monday. Like, he is a case of the super unbelievable, amazing Mondays.
I had a very good weekend, and baseball is awesome, and Salvador Perez is going to hit a home run every game, and things are going good.
Four home runs for Salvador Perez. You had a good weekend, huh?
Yeah. My son had a basketball tournament and played very well, and now we're getting ready to head to a national qualifier. So,
busy. Oh, awesome. Excellent. Who are you leading off your waiver wire column with? Or I know you've already written it. Who'd you lead it off with?
I am buying in one last time to Steven Souza. And I know what you're going to say about how Steven Souza started last year, but this year's different because he's not striking out. Now, he's not going to have a 6.7% K rate like he did in the first week of the season. He's not going to hit 417 either. He's not going to walk three times as many times as he strikes out. But man, if he could just get that strikeout rate down to 20 or 25% like he did in the minor leagues for the most part, he was only at 18% in AAA in 2014. If he just gets down to that range, you're looking at a 270, 280 hitter with 25 plus home runs.
Okay, well, Souza is now 33% owned. He's 27 years old, and he's got 10 hits and 24 at bats with a home run. He's got obvious power, Steven Souza, but yeah, it's been a disappointing career for him. This would be a big time post hype sleeper.
I think he's actually in my post hype sleepers column. Which maybe gives me some confirmation bias as a reason to believe in this. But the thing is, like, he's 27, he'll be 28 relatively soon. And I've generally given up on guys improving a great deal at that point in their career, but he still has less than 1,000 plate appearances. So I don't think there's any reason to think that he couldn't get that strikeout rate back down a little bit more under control.
All right, I asked you off the air if you'd drop Keon Broxton for Steven Souza. Let me ask you, would you drop A, Broxton, B, Buxton for Souza?
I would drop Buxton for Souza.
Would you?
I don't know what Buxton did yesterday, but I tweeted out before nothing. Yesterday's game. Coming into yesterday's game, he had 175 career strikeouts. 173 career total bases.
Well, first of all, he's been moved down in the order. He's been batting 7th and 8th over the weekend, and Buxton is 2 for 26 with 13 strikeouts and one walk.
He may need to be moved down in the organization again.
Would you nickname your team Dr. Souza? Are you ready to do
I
that?
I don't dislike that.
Okay. All right, I just want to see where you're at with Souza, how committed you are. Let's talk about more players, Heath, and Scott's going to be joining us shortly as well. Stat of the day, according to ESPN, Stats and Info, teams that entered the ninth inning with a 6-plus run lead had won 346 games in a row. But that ended yesterday. Not a good day to be a Mariners fan. Not a good week to be a Mariners fan. They're off to a terrible start. The bullpen implosion yesterday, I guess the only fantasy thing here, they gave up a 7-run lead. They lost. Or they gave up a 6-run lead. They lost on a 7-run ninth to the Angels on the road. Edwin Diaz, any worries here?
No, not at all.
All right.
I'm fine. Everybody else was bad, too.
So listen, if you're new to the show or you just forgot, here's what we do on Monday. We recap a lot of what went on over the weekend. We talk about the pitchers and hitters that did well and those that did poorly. We talk about who we added on our rosters and give you a little context of how much we like the waiver wire guys. We'll look at the most added list and look at who you added to your rosters, the weekend standouts and all that. I think big news should be coming in Philadelphia. Not necessarily, but it does seem like Jeanmar Gomez, as Pete McCannon calls him. I'm going to go with his pronunciation. Is probably going to lose his closer's role. If not,
how could he not?
Yeah.
Like, what if you don't lose your job now, what would you have to do? Although it was nice that he picked up a win. So good for people that started Jeanmar Gomez.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to be Hector Neris. It's probably going to be Neris or Joaquin Benoit, because Neris is a very good, valuable pitcher, and they don't want to lose his versatility necessarily. So get on that. Before you hear the announcement, if you need a closer, Neris, Benoit, that's how you'd rank it, right? Neris 1, Benoit 2?
Yes, and Neris was in the waiver wire column today. He is still just 40% owned, so I would expect that will be rising throughout the week. I don't know that he'll get the first shot, but
yeah,
I would sure like to see it. He's the best pitcher.
And I didn't really make that many ad drops this weekend. I added Hunter Renfroe in a 12-team, three outfielder points league. I drafted Hunter Renfroe. I dropped him for Carlos Gomez a few days ago. I added him again, dropping Keon Broxton. So I'm playing a little outfielder roulette there. But I like the start that Renfroe's off to. I added Denard Span for $0 in a roto league. And other than that, I really stood pat over the weekend. I did not do much. How about you?
I added Alex Wood in one league as a just kind of a just in case. Going to keep him on the bench this week and see if he does something that makes him worth owning.
Okay.
I added two start Tyler Chatwood in a league where I was really desperate at starting pitcher.
Oh, wow.
One of those starts is at Coors, but it's against the Padres, so there's still some reason for hope there.
He's not a bad pitcher.
I was able to get Travis Shaw in the one league that I didn't have him. He was available on the waivers wire, so I added him, I think, for 8% of my FAB budget.
Okay.
And then it seems like there was maybe one more ad. Scott, who did you add?
The two most exciting additions I had, the ones I was excited to see when I woke up this morning, I got Greg Holland for $8 in a weekly FAB league. I don't know what his ownership percentage was up to, but I don't imagine in daily ad leagues he was available in too many still.
No.
And I was excited in Tout Wars, which is 15-team roto. I got Joaquin Benoit for the equivalent. It's $1,000 FAB, so like $1.6 if you're converting down to 100. I got him for $16. Neris was actually owned in, I think, all of the leagues I'm in but one. He was already owned. I guess, you know, just...
You got Mitch Haniger in our league.
Speculating. Yeah, I did get Mitch Haniger.
You got Kendall Graveman, too. Are you excited about your Kendall Graveman ad?
Which league did I get him in?
The Podcast Points League. 12-team Podcast Points League.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, no, he was a player who... I put a lot of bids out there on. I was normally prioritizing the closers over him, and I prioritized Mitch Haniger in leagues where I didn't already own him. But Graveman, the velocity up this year, and what back-to-back, was it two-hit efforts in both? Just allowed two hits in each of them?
Yeah, he's been great. The reason I didn't go after Graveman, I thought about it. One, there wasn't really anybody I really wanted to drop. I would have had to drop, like, Ivan Nova, and he had a good enough start where I just stuck with him. Graveman is still throwing almost exclusively sinkers. I don't know how much success he can... I mean, I feel like he's throwing, like, 90% sinkers or something crazy like that. So I'm not saying he shouldn't be added. I'm just saying
right.
I was thinking, man,
really?
I don't think so.
90% is pretty absurd.
You could check it out. He's basically a one pitch guy right
like,
now, and yeah, two hits.
Al added him in our head to head auction league and dropped Gio Gonzalez.
I would do that.
I'm not sure if I would or not.
Yeah, you're right. This last start was 92.9% sinkers.
Yeah,
I mean that ball has wicked movement on it, though.
Oh, it's a good pitch. It could work. I don't know. Probably limits the strikeout upside and.
No matter how wicked the movement of a pitch is, if you throw it every time and everybody knows that it's coming, it becomes less wicked.
But it looks like it moves differently. I won't say every time. There are probably only a limited number of movements it can make, but it doesn't follow the same motion every time he throws it. And, I mean, a strikeout per inning so far this year, a strikeout per inning this spring, I don't know. Obviously, the reason he wasn't already considered a fantasy commodity is because he hasn't been a good strikeout pitcher in the past, and that's led to other issues. But I don't think his sinker's been as effective in the past as it looks like it is early this year.
Very possible. Now, let me update everybody on what nobody cares about. Team Scam and Team Kreeth took it on the chins this week.
Oh, we got crushed.
In the Podcast Categories League, Team Scam went 1-7-2. And Team Kreeth went 2-8, and a new poll has been posted from Ryan McGarry. Who will end up with a better record, Scam or Kreeth? I think I might vote for Kreeth because I'm so upset. Nah, I'll vote for Scam. But it was a bad week for us. Actually, it was a pretty crappy week for me in general in fantasy. Of my five leagues, I only did well in one. So, but things will change. Yesterday, in our auction league, I had in our roto league, I had Marco Estrada, Garrett Cole, Daniel Norris, and Edwin Diaz pitching yesterday. So I had a 7 ERA. I think I'm dead last in basically every pitching category.
It's a good start. It's a good start. I had to go log on. I hadn't seen the poll yet, so I wanted to vote for Kreese to make sure you guys didn't jump out ahead of us.
We're ahead 1-0.
Well, that's tied.
Who stood out to you this weekend, Scott? Why don't you start, like, weekend standouts?
Okay. Well, while I open up the email of 30 names I suggested for doing player update videos today, because that would probably be a good way to figure out who stood out to me this weekend. I want to mention that Brandon Webb, back when he was good, threw his sinker about 75-80% of the time, and he was winning Cy Youngs and such. So
look at that, the Kendall Graveman. No, it's a good point, Scott. Yeah, I didn't mean to dump all over Kendall Graveman.
I didn't know what the answer would be when I was looking it up. I was just curious because I felt like he was somebody who... Okay, it's taking me too long to open this email, so I'm just going to go off the top of my head.
Why don't I go? You want me to
Manuel
go?
Manuel Margot okay. Having that two-homer game made me think about adding him in a couple leagues.
Yeah, he's off to a nice start.
Mitch Haniger, obviously. I mean, home runs on back-to-back days this weekend. I mean, and long ones to, like, center field.
Well, who do you like better, Haniger or Margot?
Haniger, but I had them... I had a bid put in for them, like... You know, I prioritized Haniger just over Margot in a head-to-head points league. And it's kind of interesting. Margot, we kind of build him as a steal specialist coming into the year. And, you know, maybe that's all he ends up being. But that would be, you'd think of him strictly as a roto guy in that sense. If he is one of these... You know, 12 to 15 homer guys with pretty good extra base pop. I think that kind of shifts his value more over to points leagues with as little as he strikes out. He becomes like one of those whole is greater than the sum of the parts guys, like a Francisco Lindor, for instance. And so maybe that makes him more valuable in that format. I don't know. I think it's worth a shot if you need outfield help, because I'm always willing to gamble on talent if that talent then shows signs of getting some production to back it up.
Heath, would you rather have Manuel Margot or Steven Souza?
I will go with Souza. But I was excited about Margot.
I'm going to try, by the way, to read some emails later in the show at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. All right, Heath, stand out for you?
Well, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that stood out as much as Francisco Liriano stood out. That
Ooh.
Was woof.
Yeah, that was let me get the numbers there. Liriano 77% owned. He did not get out of the first inning. He gave up I have his line completely messed. I think he gave up 5 runs with 4 walks on 3 hits in like a third of an inning or something like that. It was terrible at Tampa Bay, and 2016 with the Blue Jays, Liriano had a 2.92 ERA, a 1.18 WHIP, which is really good for him, and a strikeout per inning. So I certainly didn't drop him. Was anybody giving thought of dropping Liriano after this horrible start?
There was one league where, you know, Brandon Finnegan was still available into the weekend, and I think he was the only league where Finnegan was still available. So, you know, you're thinking fairly shallow league as far as pitching is concerned if he was even still out there. And I was willing to exchange Liriano for Finnegan in that case, just because, like, if nobody's picking up Finnegan after that start, nobody's picking up Liriano after that start, you
right.
know?
Yeah, we'll have to watch Liriano and see what happens. He could turn into, like, he's up there in age, and he's always kind of walked the tightrope. He could turn into, like, an Ubaldo Jimenez, who you drop him, and then he has a really good start, and you pick him up, and then he's awful for 3 weeks, and then you drop him, and then he does the same thing again. And then I would say, like I mentioned it earlier, but Salvador Perez with 4 home runs, just ride this for a little while, and then you can sell him around the end of May.
Well, that's
I am
thing.
Still optimistic about Liriano long term, by the way, which was why I was holding on to him.
I mean, the thing with Salvador Perez is that we fantasy veterans know at this point they wear him out. Ned Yost doesn't rest him enough, and Perez, I think, has had 3 straight bad second halves.
Well, I think his plan this year is just to hit more home runs so he doesn't have to run around the bases. He can just jog.
Well, that's that's a great strategy. Why didn't more people think about that? Yeah, so at some point you probably want to sell high on Salvador Perez, but if you're in a league where like everybody knows, you might have to do it sooner rather than later. But yeah, he's off to a great start.
It'd be hard to justify selling him to yourself, though, knowing the kind of catcher you're going to replace him with, right?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't trade him for, what you're hoping to do is just accept a little downgrade at catcher and get better somewhere else, I think. Because then you're hoping that it's not actually a downgrade because Perez is just as bad as that guy in the
second. Yeah, I guess.
You know, there are two catchers that don't have a hit right now, by the way. Austin Hedges and Russell Martin. Your thoughts?
A little bit more, like, Hedges, both of them are worrisome. Martin's old, and Hedges hasn't proven anything.
But if it was, I mean, Jonathan Lucroy has what, one hit?
Yeah, right, he's been bad. We think he's much better than those
right,
two.
Right, so you're still just applying your preseason ideas on these players.
Right, I would just say that an older player is more likely to have just lost it, and a younger player is more likely to just get sent back down.
Russell Martin started last year batting 172. 172 with 45 strikeouts in his first 39 games. And then he was pretty good. In the last 98 games, he hit 252 with 20 home runs. So got off to a terrible start last year, too.
Sounds like he's not doing a very good job of preparing in the offseason.
Yeah, I guess not.
I was sure he had lost it with that strikeout rate the first 7 weeks last year. And,
Fooled you!
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I wanted to talk about a few pitchers from the weekend. One, Michael Wacha. Michael Wacha is about 80% owned, and he was brilliant on Saturday. Six innings, three hits, one run, one walk, six strikeouts. So this happened to be one of the games that I watched, so maybe that's why he stood out to me. But even the Cardinals broadcaster was saying like he couldn't remember seeing Michael Wacha pitch this well. He had 13 swinging strikes on only 83 pitches. Last year, Wacha reached 13 swinging strikes twice, and he did that on 114 pitches and 97 pitches. He did it on 83 pitches on Saturday. So he's off to a good start. Let's keep an eye on that. And then two pitchers who are struggling right now that were drafted around the same range as high upside number threes or maybe solid number two starting pitchers. Gerrit Cole. I mean, look, the ERA wasn't terrible. Six innings, three runs. That's not good. But a lot of hits so far this year. And not that many strikeouts. And Masahiro Tanaka. Let's see if you guys agree. I am not panicking, but worried about Gerrit Cole and really want to buy low on Tanaka because his velocity is fine. I mean, I saw him hitting like 94 on the gun and it's just control and he's never been a control problem. Tanaka has never walked more than 1.6 batters per nine. He's all over the place.
The only thing I would say to that, and it was a good point that Scott made in the preseason when I wasn't worrying about Wade Davis and he was, is that a lot of times when there's an injury issue, it's the control that goes and not the velocity. And there was that report that the Yankees weren't really interested in Tanaka after this year because they're not happy with his arm. So I'm concerned about both of these guys, but I'm not to the point to where I'm benching either one of them.
Well, the report was, the report was like they would, if he opted out, they're not going to sign him to a new contract because of concerns about his arm. You know, he's got the partially torn UCL. And that did occur to me. But also, he was the most dominant starting pitcher in spring training. So it was, it hasn't been an ongoing thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was just spring training. That's worth bringing up anytime we talk about contrasting performances. But I agree more or less with your assessment, Adam. And, I was kind of the low guy on Gerrit Cole coming in because it seemed like his velocity was great last year, too. And even before he missed the time with the triceps oblique, that time he missed with the injury for a good chunk, middle portion of the season, the strikeout rate wasn't there. And it wasn't there this spring, and it hasn't been here through two games. So whatever went wrong for him last year, it seems like it's just continued so far. And I still don't know what the answer to what it is, but it's worrisome. I'd be interested in shopping him if I felt like I could get a good enough return. Obviously, don't want to take a low ball offer, but maybe Tanaka himself is somebody you can offer Cole up for.
You know, Cole is a one-star pitcher at the Cubs this week, and as of now, I'm going to set my lineup again, you know, before the game start at 1. As of now, I got him on the bench. I'm starting a two-start Alex Cobb in a points league over Garrett Cole, and I don't remember who I'm starting in the Roto League over Garrett Cole, but I got him on the bench for, again, Alex Cobb. And, yeah, I don't know. I might start him over, like, Jason Hamill. But Hamill's facing Oakland. Cole's at the Cubs. I'm nervous.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily disagree with the two-start Alex Cobb over him in a points league. But I just don't feel like I have four other starters on most teams that I'm going to start over Cole. I'm not starting one-start Jason Hamill over Garrett Cole.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'd go that far either.
All righty, guys. You know, last year, the first week of the season was really fun. We had mostly Trevor Story to thank for that. He was going nuts, and every day was like, Trevor Story or this guy? Where are we putting him in our rankings? Trevor Story or this guy? As Aaron Sanchez came, you know, was dominant. Who is this year's Trevor Story?
That's clearly Mitch Haniger, right?
I don't think so. He's not doing... Nobody's doing what Story did.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, that's Story was doing historic.
I was going to say Nomar Mazara potentially being that guy.
But Mazara, we had a higher expectation for than, like, Story kind of came out of nowhere. Mazara is not coming out of nowhere. He was pretty decent last year, and he's 22 years old, and he's one of the top prospects in baseball a couple years ago.
All right, so let's not take it too literally here. I'm talking like,
I mean, it might be Graveman, right?
Might be.
guy who goes from complete afterthought in fantasy. And again, it's not apples to apples either, because Story had a big spring last year and started to get drafted late in mixed leagues. But Graveman, I don't know that we can really speculate what kind of pitcher he's going to be if this velocity gain is legit and sustainable. But I do know he's always a guy the Athletics have valued greatly. Remember when they traded Josh Donaldson to the Blue Jays, and for what seemed like a bunch of non-prospects, their reasoning behind it was that the package was just too attractive to pass on, and it was mostly headlined by Graveman and Semien. And it just seems like they've since acquiring Graveman, they've always been higher on him than the rest of the baseball world has, and maybe it's starting to show now. Why?
Okay. All right. So no necessarily Trevor Story, right? I think it's been sort of a tame week one. I mean, there are some storylines. JT Realmuto is hitting .500.
Yeah.
Think about Mazara.
Greg Holland's back.
Yeah, he's been great.
That's a big one. Let me just say
something about Mazara real quick. He's 0-3 against lefties so far, and he had only 2 extra base hits in 111 at bats against lefties last year. So that's something to keep an eye on.
And if I could add something about Mitch Haniger, who again I made sure he was owned in every league. I had him in a lot already, but it could still go wrong for him, obviously. A 3-homer week is great. It's encouraging. It's reason to pick him up everywhere. He also has 10 strikeouts and 28 at-bats. Now, strikeouts weren't a big issue for him in the minors, so maybe it's just a issue of small sample size. But if he is striking out 1 every 3 at-bats all year, he becomes more like what Steven Souza was the first couple years of his career, and that's probably not going to be mixed league valuable.
I was curious when I was putting together the waiver wire column this morning. I did not put Mitch Haniger in the column because he was up over 63% owned. I don't feel like Haniger should be 100% owned.
Probably not, but if he was only 60, I probably would have put him at 63. I kind of use 80 as the cutoff.
Okay, yeah, I didn't have anybody over 60, so yeah. I guess it doesn't look like I excluded him. I just excluded those guys that were 60 to 80% owned.
Right. because I'm sure there are a decent number of mixed leagues out there where he is still available, and I do think it probably needs to be up over 80, maybe close to 90 at this point.
Yeah, I'm surprised Haniger isn't owned in closer to 80% of leagues. All right, so there, look, Yasiel Puig's another guy who's been off to a good start. Gerardo Parra's off to a really good start. He's 45% owned. So, you know, it's only been 1 week. Miguel Sano, not really striking out much. That's It's a great sign. He's batting 350 with two home runs. Well, he's striking out, four walks, seven strikeouts.
Another thing to pay attention to, and just so I can say his name again, because I feel like when I said his name the first time, we just skipped over it. positional eligibility. We have gotten past the five-game mark for a lot of teams, so we're seeing guys that were not necessarily eligible at certain positions. Yonhever Solarte is now second base eligible as well. Oh, and by the way, he's crushing the ball.
And Brandon Drury is as well, and he's also crushing the ball.
Yes, Brandon Drury as well.
Who's better, Drury or Solarte?
I would rather have Solarte for sure in a points league. I think in Roto too.
Okay. Scott, Drury or Solarte?
Gosh, that's close. I think Drury. I think I like the upside, overall upside a little more for Drury.
Okay. One more hitter real quick here, and then we'll talk about the injuries. Gary Sanchez on the DL. We'll tell you to start or sit Greg Bird, Jackie Bradley, Josh Donaldson, Trey Turner. But, you know, Chris mentioned during the preseason, like spring training, that Yonder Alonso was changing his swing, trying to do the fly ball, loft, launch angle thing, whatever it is that the kids are doing these days. And I said,
right.
Well, if it works for Yonder Alonso, then I'll buy it, you know. And he's 6% owned, but he's batting .389 with a home run, three walks and three strikeouts and a double, and sitting against lefties. But I just wanted to throw that out. I thought it was funny because I just had absolutely no faith in Alonso being mixed league relevant, but off to a good start.
Well, I will just say, not to poo-poo Yonder Alonso, because the one home run's great, but the hitting the ball in the air a lot more is not something that's supposed to help your BABIP, and he's got a 430 BABIP, so he's hit a lot of balls in play, and that's good, but that's about it.
All righty. Hey, look, getting a lot of listener tweets lately. Got a few more over the weekend about SeatGeek. This is true. Now, people are downloading the SeatGeek app. They're using the promo code FANTASY to save $20. It's baseball season. Go to a baseball game or go to a concert or a play or a comedy show. Use SeatGeek to find tickets. And when you use SeatGeek, get a $20 rebate off your first purchase with our promo code FANTASY. And here's the thing. After you use the promo code, you're not going to get the discount, but you're still going to use SeatGeek every time you need tickets, just like I do. Why? Because SeatGeek saves you time and money. It's the best place to buy tickets. SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites for you to pull in all of the best deals, and SeatGeek grades every seat based on value. That means you can easily see which tickets are the best bargains. It's really like a very clever, very simple, easy-to-use website and app. Get seats to an event with just a few taps. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY. That promo code is FANTASY. You'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. The promo code is FANTASY. All right, bullpen. Was there anything that happened in the bullpen other than the Jean-Marc Gomez thing that we talked about? Other than that, that really stood out over the weekend? Maybe Blake Treinen? You tell me.
Go ahead.
Well, Treinen had a shaky outing, like you said. Kota Glover followed it Sunday with a shaky outing of his own. So I don't know. I don't know that Treinen's any closer to losing his job than he was when he first got the job. I would also say Sam Dyson yesterday made his third appearance finally after two disaster outings at the start of the week. Non-safe situation Sunday, but he, you know, it was a pretty clean inning. I think he maybe gave up a hit. So that extends the leash probably just a little bit for him.
The Reds used their new two-inning save strategy with Raisel Iglesias, and he was very, very good. Struck out three, did not give up a hit over those two innings, now has two saves. The only bad part about that is, you know, he's not going to pitch for at least one day, maybe two, after he does that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, also, Scott, in that Sam Dyson outing, Matt Bush pitched the eighth inning, and he did strike out three batters, but he gave up two hits and a run. So can't be a bad thing for Sam Dyson.
Yeah. It's a bad thing if you picked up Bush and are rooting for him. But
yeah. We don't care about
Dyson. Dyson had a walk, actually, not a hit, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Edwin Diaz, though, had the big meltdown of the weekend, right? That was just yesterday, Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bad situation. He came in after the momentum was already building. Just couldn't stop it.
It was a seven-run ninth, right?
Yeah.
Seven
runs. Only three of them were his.
Yeah, only three.
Yeah.
But, you know, he looked fine before that. He hasn't been hitting 102 yet like he did last year. So I guess if we want to worry about something, we can worry about velocity. But I don't know. I would imagine it probably takes a little time to build up to 102. And if you're hitting 98 instead, it's probably not terrible. Not a terrible thing.
There was not a good week for injuries, not a good weekend. Now, hopefully none of these are too bad, but Trey Turner hurt his hamstring. I'm going to say a name. You tell me, as of right now, as of 9:50 a.m. Eastern, starter sit Trey Turner, who has the hamstring injury.
I plan to start him. I plan to start Josh Donaldson, too. Sorry if I'm skipping ahead.
That's fine.
But both of them are... Their teams are saying they're not going on the DL, or at least they themselves are saying it, and the upside is just too high. Even if it ends up being only 4 or 5 games, they're 4 or 5 games I want to get credit for.
Got to mention, though, with Donaldson, another calf injury, and he dealt
with... that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, he dealt with it last year.
It is in a different spot than the one in spring training, I read.
Right, that's what John Gibbons said, but he dealt with calf injuries last year. He dealt with one in spring training. He played most of the year with a calf injury last year and still was unbelievable, so that's good, but... That's, you know, this is why I don't have any Donaldson on my team, because I thought he was the riskiest of all those first round hitters.
What is Turner's, like, I was trying to look too, is there off day on Monday this week? Is it on Tuesday? Because if I found out, if I knew he had an off day and 6 games max, and then found out that he wasn't playing on Monday for sure, so then he's at 5 games max. I'm a little more skeptical of starting him if I've got any other decent options.
They are playing on Monday, and they are playing on Tuesday and Wednesday, and they are off on Thursday.
Thursday, yeah.
So if he's not in the lineup tonight, that lowers the standard for what I need out of a replacement for him, personally.
Rich Hill's on the DL with a blister. Big surprise.
Shocking.
They're hoping it'll be 10 days, and that's why Alex Wood is in the rotation, right? He's the replacement.
Yes, I'm guessing it'll just be for one start, and he won't be a 2-start option this week.
Why are you so optimistic about this blister? After we just saw what happened last year with his blisters. Like, I'm not saying it's definite to be like that, but if I saw on Twitter that you were mostly optimistic about it.
Well, I my initial reaction was pessimistic, and then the more I read about it, it's apparently just a minor thing. It's likely he just misses one start. I just think we're going to see teams... Abuse is such a negative word, but I can't think of another one at the moment. Now that the DL's 10 days instead of 15, rather than have a guy just use up a roster spot for 5 days with the potential for it being more, a lot of day-to-day injuries are going to become DL stints just because 10. I mean, particularly for pitchers, if you plan it right, you can make it so they just miss a start. So I think we're going to see a lot of this.
All right, Garrett Richards is on the DL with a bicep strain. Gary Sanchez is on the DL also with a bicep strain. And Austin Romine is going to take his place. If we look at catchers, I can look at some available catchers here. Let's see. We've got Sandy Leon, who's 64% owned. Let me go to the most owned catchers here. Guys who are owned in, you know, less than 70% of leagues. We're talking Stephen Vogt, Sandy Leon, Cameron Rupp. Who would you take out of those three?
I'm still going with Rupp, although he's off to a bad start to the year.
I went with Vogt, actually. In a league where I'm replacing Sanchez, I went with Vogt over Rupp.
A little bit deeper, we got Darnot, Zunino, Cervelli, and Hedges, and Jason Castro. Darnot, Zunino, Cervelli, Hedges, and Castro.
I'd go Darnot.
Me too.
We got James McCann, Yan Gomes, Tony Walters, Soto. Some real garbage here in deep leagues.
Walters.
Yeah, although Soto's kind of interesting. I tried to add him in Tout Wars 15 teams, 2 catchers, but somebody actually outbid me for him. So if he plays regularly for the White Sox, I could see him hitting between 15 and 20 homers.
Okay, so Soto would be better than Austin Romine?
Yes.
Okay. Greg Bird could play today, but he's dealing with a foot injury and a stomach illness. I don't think I'd start Greg Bird. I know they're home, but boy, he's been terrible. I have to think the foot has something to do with it, the ankle. And, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very different situation from Donaldson and Turner, I think. Jackie... mostly just relying on a big spring. That's where his value comes from.
Jackie Bradley has a sprained ligament in his knee. He might need to go on the DL. Adrian Beltre is eligible to come off the DL, but he was eligible yesterday. He didn't come off, and Jeff Banister won't really give us any clues as to when Adrian Beltre will play. Starter sit Matt Kemp.
I'm sitting him if he doesn't get in the lineup today.
Probably sit him in 3 outfield, but not 5 outfield.
Roberto Ozuna could come off the DL tomorrow. Boston has the flu, although it seems like they're getting a little bit better. And Colin McHugh is going to be shut down for 6 weeks due to elbow discomfort. No UCL damage, but that means Fires and Musgrove stay in the rotation for a while. And there's some other stuff that I don't care about. Most added list. Let's get to some stuff that will help fantasy owners. The most added players in CBSSports.com leagues are Mark Reynolds, 51% owned now. Brandon Finnegan, up to 88% owned. Sandy Leon, Travis Shaw, Santiago Casilla, 31% owned. Thoughts? He's the fifth most added player.
I was telling people most of last week that I thought Mark Reynolds was way under-owned. We've surpassed my ownership desires for Mark Reynolds. We don't need to add him anymore.
He's 51%. Why are people picking up Santiago Casilla?
Because they don't know who the A's closer is, and they want to speculate on one of them.
He is only 31% owned. I think him being this high on the most added list is mostly a result of him beginning with 5% ownership. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not getting that much traction in mixed leagues.
And we got Kendall Graveman. We have Manuel Margot. We have Charlie Morton, 61% owned, and 2 starts this week, by the way. Let's see. Antonio Senzatella is 25% owned. Oh, Amir Garrett, the Reds starting pitcher with a nice start over the weekend. He's 39% owned. Anybody motivated to pick him up?
He was the pitcher who when I was going and putting in my waiver claims this weekend, he was always just the one I had to leave out. Like, there wasn't quite enough players I was willing to drop to pick him up.
I did put him towards the bottom of the waiver wire column today because I think he's a guy that you could speculate on one good start turning into a little bit of a trend. He had some potential a couple of years ago. So
last year, Double A last year at a sub-2 ERA.
Give him a shot.
That's Amir Garrett of the Reds. And Jason Castro is 30% owned. He is the second most added catcher behind Sandy Leon. You guys make anything of this? The Twins catcher, Jason Castro.
I mean, if you need a second catcher, you could do worse, but he's not. It's not like there's real breakout potential here.
Nope.
How do you feel about Gerardo Parra? Parra, 45% owned now. He is in 7 games, batting .440 with a home run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, no steals yet.
I think he needs to be higher owned than that. He should be higher owned than Mark Reynolds. I feel there's with Reynolds, there's really no hope that Mark Reynolds holds on to a job unless there's more injuries, because as soon as Desmond comes back, he's gone.
Yeah, you'd think. I do wonder if maybe they might work out a timeshare between the left-handed hitting Parra and the right-handed hitting Reynolds.
That's possible.
Stays hot.
But even then, Parra would get a lot more playing time.
Yeah. Parra only has 2 extra base hits, which is worth noting. But, you know, he's worth playing until he cools off, I think.
Also,
and as little as he strikes out, he could stay hot for a while.
Also, Parra homered off Clayton Kershaw. He has, I think, the best OPS. I don't know if it's of lefties or of any hitter against Clayton Kershaw with a minimum of 30 at-bats. He's got like 1,000 OPS against Kershaw. It's bizarre.
That's weird.
Yeah. I rank these outfielders. They are all on the most added list. Margot, Parra, Souza, and Chris Owings, who's also shortstop eligible, but let's throw him in there too.
Souza, Margot, Parra, Owings.
Margot, Souza, Owings, Parra.
Oh. People want us to talk about Owings, and they want us to talk about Archie Bradley.
Okay. Bradley's made a couple nice relief appearances. And I did read an article on MLB.com suggesting that maybe if Rodney falters, Bradley is someone who could step in and take over the closer role. But let's not put the cart before the horse. It is only 2 appearances. And that Diamondbacks are still saying they intend to move him to the rotation in the long run. There's just no opening right now. Eventually someone will get hurt, or just Shelby Miller will stink it up again or whatever. But right now he's in the bullpen, and he's probably their best pure arm in the bullpen.
We probably slept on Owings just a little bit as a late round source of steals. I don't expect that he's going to really hit for any power, but he's hitting at a decent spot in the order at times this year. He's off to a good start. He's got 4 stolen bases. He stole 37 in 2015 and 16 combined. So
I guess the big concern, like, is Ahmed Rosario, a great defensive shortstop, going to take at bats from him, and eventually Ketel Marte coming up from the minors and doing that. He has to hit probably to stay
right
a regular player for the Diamondbacks. But 4 steals so far, and steals are hard to find. Dual eligible player. I just see him as maybe like a strictly roto option right now.
And I think people are looking at Archie Bradley. That's Chris Owings they were talking about. People are looking at Archie Bradley as potentially the guy who's going to get you great whip and ERA. You know, Andrew Miller of the National League, maybe.
I don't believe he's that.
That's really putting the cart before the horse.
Okay, well, you know, it could be a role for him. Like you look at Luis Severino last year. Luis Severino ended up being one of the best relievers in baseball when he was a reliever. He just stunk as a starter. Now Bradley's doing more of a multi-inning role, but you know, we've seen it. You move a guy to the bullpen, his stuff plays up much better. I think
what my hope, my realistic hope is for Bradley is that he goes the Danny Duffy route.
That'd be nice. That'd be very nice. Duffy had another good start over the weekend. Let's talk about stolen bases. Here are some guys who had big steal weekends. Brett Gardner stole 2 bags on Friday and another on Saturday. Kansas City second baseman Raul Mondesi had a 2-2 steal game at Houston on Friday. Gene Segura stole 3 bases yesterday. Malik Smith stole 2 bases on Saturday for Tampa Bay. Chris Owings had 2 steals on Sunday. And Manny Machado stole a base more than last year already. That was on Saturday. Anything jump out in the stolen base category?
Well, Segura had 1 stolen base yesterday. Brought him to 3.
Oh, he had 1? I'm sorry. I thought he stole 3 bags.
Sometimes it's you see the number after his name in the box score, and
sometimes you assume
the wrong thing.
My bad.
I mean, Malik Smith reached base 5 times, I think, in that game Saturday. And then he went 0-for-4 Sunday, so maybe it's, you know, just a weird game that we can put behind us. But that's somebody who, on the lower end, you can look to get steals if he's able to get on base, and you know, walks had a lot to do with it on Saturday. That would help his cause.
All right, and what else we got from the hitters? I think we more or less have covered the hitters. Michael Conforto started his first game of the season and he homered. It doesn't seem like he's going to get any more playing time out of that. Not yet, anyway.
Nope.
And let's do pitchers then. All right, so here's how we do the pitchers. We talk about the studs. We talk about the guys you might be able to pick up off waivers. Let's talk about studs being studs. And a stud, in this case, is defined. This is definitely not a stud. It just, you know, I'm only doing it for the sake of rhyming. Defined as someone who is owned in more than 80% of leagues. So some of these guys are legit studs. Some of them are Hisashi Ubakuma. Dallas Keuchel was a stud again. Zach Greinke had a great start against Cleveland, 1 run in 6 2/3 with 6 strikeouts. Lance McCullers struck out 10 with no walks, and that means 2 walks, 22 strikeouts in 2 appearances. And both he and Keuchel, by the way, have been much better at home than on the road in their careers, and so far they have made 2 home starts. Felix Hernandez, I put him in the stud category. I'm not sure. He did give up 10 hits, 3 runs in 6 innings, no walks, 6 strikeouts at the Angels. Julio Teheran is off to a good start. Michael Fulmer had a nice start against the Red Sox, but no Betts, no Bogarts, no Hanley. And Hisashi Iwakuma is keeping runs off the board, but he has 6 walks, 4 strikeouts on the year. Anybody I said, Keuchel, Greinke, McCullers, Felix, Teheran, Fulmer, Iwakuma, that you want to talk about?
I think we're obviously all in on Lance McCullers now, and he'll probably move up. We talked about Cole and Tanaka earlier. He probably will move up ahead of those guys in my rest of season rankings because he wasn't too far behind them anyway.
Can we? I want to see more. I think I'd rather have Tanaka than McCullers.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you would.
You wouldn't?
I don't know that I would.
After two starts, I'm not going to say that McCullers.
I had McCullers in my top 30 starting pitchers as it was, and I had Tanaka between 20 and 30, so it's not a huge leap.
All right, first of all, McCullers has an injury history. Secondly,
comparing him to the guy that's pitching with half a UCL.
But he's stayed healthy with half a UCL, and he's pitched well. And I'm just saying, I think you might be a little hasty on McCullers. The walks could come back.
I agree. It's a little hasty to move him that far up. But 17 strikeouts to two walks itself relieves a lot of concern. It's mostly, in McCullers' case, will he be able to handle anywhere close to the workload we expect from Tanaka?
So I want to clarify. If I have Masahiro Tanaka in a league where you guys have Lance McCullers and I offer you Tanaka, you're going to accept it?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't imagine turning that down. No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't have any McCullers.
I the only league I got McCullers is was one where you and Chris are not in it, Heath. So, Greinke, this might be a good opportunity to sell high on Greinke because his velocity still isn't back up to even last year's level. So, you know, good start. But again, remember what selling high means. You're not dumping him. You're getting something really valuable in return. Like, I don't know, Cole Hamels or Chris Archer. Chris Archer might be tough to get in this sort of deal, but
would you trade Greinke for Gerrit Cole?
No.
I have even less faith in Gerrit Cole than I do Greinke.
Yeah, I love Gerrit Cole, and I don't know that I would trade Cole for Greinke, but I certainly wouldn't trade Greinke for Cole, if that makes any sense. I have trouble parting with players sometimes. It's easier to say you would do a trade and to actually do it.
When it's like two players that I feel are more or less equivalent, I'd rather just hold on to the one I have because I feel like I'm going to hate myself more if I trade for the guy who then falls apart.
Let's talk about studs being duds. Tanaka, we talked about. Carlos Martinez had a terrible start. Gerrit Cole, we talked about. Yu Darvish. You know, look, Yu Darvish only gave up one run, but he's got 8 walks and 9 strikeouts and 12 and a third so far. And Rick Porcello is giving up a lot of hits. Well, he did on Sunday.
He's given up more hits than anyone in baseball this year.
Really?
I was just looking at the league leaders.
That makes sense.
McCullers leads the league in strikeouts, and Porcello leads the league in hits allowed.
Yeah, he's made 2 starts, and one of them was 11 hitter. So
that is a useless stat. but it's funny. Anybody concerning you here?
Other than the ones we mentioned earlier, Cole and well, Tanaka doesn't even really concern me that much. So just Cole for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot of concern about these guys.
All right, studs being duds part 2. These guys are owned in more than 80% of leagues. They're not quite studs yet, but they were duds. John Gray.
I don't know if he was a dud.
One run in 5 1/3, but 3 walks, 1 strikeout, 3 swinging strikes. It's weird.
You pitch a home game and go 5 1/3 and give up one run at Coors. I don't care about the rest.
Good job.
You don't care about
the
rest. Wow.
You didn't even get a quality start.
If you're a John
start.
Gray owner, you survived one of the 15 Coors starts he's going to make, and his numbers didn't get a lot worse.
Yeah, but if John Gray is going to remain as owned as he is, he's going to have to do more than survive at home. I understand the odds are against him, but he's going to have to.
Yeah, I'm going to be holding my breath every time he makes a home start. I'm like, oh, please, 5 1/3, 1 inning, 3 walks,
yes,
1 strikeout.
You're rostering a pitcher that pitches for the Rockies.
Then he was overdrafted.
We hold our breath every time a visiting pitcher goes into Coors, whether they're good or not.
That's why I didn't draft him.
We're talking great half of Gray's starts. Like, yeah, I agree he's overdrafted if we can never trust him at home. And that seems to be what you're suggesting. I'd feel better about the start of his first one at Milwaukee was good. The fact that we haven't seen the John Gray we drafted in either of his first 2 starts, I think is definitely concerning. And yeah, the home park is the underlying concern to all of it.
Is anybody on this list over-owned? They're all 89% owned or more. Is anybody on this list droppable for like a 2-start pitcher or one of those, you know, red-hot outfielders? Sean Manaea, Kevin Gausman, Matt Shoemaker, Marco Estrada, Vince Velasquez.
I'm about there with Shoemaker. I'm about there. Just the strikeouts, the way we saw his strikeout drop over his final dozen starts or so last year, and it hasn't turned around. It didn't turn around in spring training, and it hasn't turned around here in two starts. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure he's much better than like Joe Musgrove.
I've never believed in Marco Estrada, so I'm a bad person to ask about him, but I don't feel like he's a owned in every league kind of guy.
I don't know that I'm ready to drop any of these guys, but Shoemaker definitely, I hear what you're saying, Scott. And Manaea, like you can't, Manaea was so dominant after giving up a 3-run homer yesterday, but he's it's two bad starts now, you know?
Yep.
And I just don't know what to make of him. So I feel like Manaea is, this is just a based on nothing prediction. He's going to get dropped.
Yep.
And then people are going to regret dropping him. Like, he's going to turn it around at some point and have a good year, Manaea.
Like, I understand he gave up a lot of runs in this. He gave up as many runs as he gave up base runners, which is just not something that's going to happen very often. And he got 10 strikeouts in 5 1/3 innings, which is awesome. So I'm not down on him based on the way he started the year.
I wonder, and I'm not saying this is the case yet, but because Manaea clearly has the ability to pitch like a must-own pitcher. But part of being a must-own pitcher is that consistency factor and not having the one or two mistakes per game.
Yeah. And also, I think Manaea is so good against lefties. And whether or not he'll be able to handle righties, kind of like Carlos Rodon, you know. And again, that's why I think like it might take him a little while this year. But we'll see. Like after he gave up that 3-run homer, Manaea just dominated, as we mentioned, 10 strikeouts. So you couldn't drop him or anything. But I got my eye on him. All right, look, we've gone a little, as always happens with the Monday show, I've taken too long, so I'm going to read a whole bunch of names now, and I want you to tell me who you like in each group. Fringy starting pitchers, part one, they're owned in 65 to 79% of leagues. Ivan Nova, Liriano, Kendall Graveman, Stephen Wright, Gazelman, Irvin Santana, Hellickson, Zimmerman, Zach Wheeler. Give me your favorite three in that group.
My favorite three are Gazelman, Liriano, and Graveman, I guess, just edges out Irvin Santana. But I wasn't dropping Santana anywhere where I picked him up initially for the two-start week.
Yeah, I don't know about specific order, but I think I might go Santana, Graveman, and Nova.
I kind of like everybody, just about everybody in this group. I feel like all of them have a case to be owned. Maybe not Wheeler.
They all have a case to be owned. Wheeler and Hellickson, I think, and Wright are probably the ones I'd be least likely to own.
Yeah, I guess I'm not really in love with Jordan Zimmerman, but I see why people would own him. I mean, Zimmerman had a good start. It was against the Red Sox, but no Betts, no Bogarts, no Hanley, and Andrew Benintendi threw up during the game, so keep that in mind. That's true, actually.
I think he got like 5 swinging strikes, too, so I don't know. I don't know that we can really make anything of this first start from Zimmerman.
And I think their broadcaster, Dave O'Brien, also threw up during that game. He had to leave. I don't know if he threw up, but he had to leave that game. That was the Saturday game. That's the one that he had to leave early. Fringy starting pitchers, part two, 50 to 64% owned. Trevor Bauer, Daniel Norris, Severino, Eduardo Rodriguez, Hyunjin Ryu. Bauer, Daniel Norris, Severino, Eduardo Rodriguez, Ryu.
I dropped Eduardo Rodriguez in a league. I think that one where I had to pick up, I needed to drop him to pick up Greg Holland or Mitch Haniger, and he's still my favorite on this list.
Okay. Ryu, I thought, you know, not bad. 4 2/3, 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts at Colorado.
Yep.
So 51%.
He's someone to keep an eye on. Yeah. That, most of these guys are on the keep an eye on. More than I want to have them on my roster.
Yeah, okay. And Fringy starting pitchers part three, 30 to 49% owned. We got Sabathia, Corbin, Shelby Miller, and Clayton Richard all pitched over the weekend. Sabathia, Corbin, Shelby Miller, Clayton Richard.
I had a move in the podcast league, or maybe it wasn't one head-to-head points league, where I was going to drop Corbin to pick up somebody. And then I saw Corbin had his start for Arizona later that afternoon, and I took the bid out. Feel okay. Like you got to hold on to him, certainly in leagues where the relief pitcher eligibility matters.
Yeah, he pitched very well yesterday. Corbin, 6 scoreless innings, 3 strikeouts against Cleveland. And deep leagues, I'm not even going to read the names. but you got him in front of you. Is there anybody in these owned in less than 30% of leagues? We talked about Amir Garrett. He's 24% owned. Garrett. Is there anybody else that you think needs to be owned right now in more leagues?
I'd like to have Garrett on my roster for his next start, just in case it's really good.
Oh, some of these did have some interesting starts over the weekend, but nobody who's really moving me to pick them up. Mike Leake had some interesting comments after his eight-inning gem against the Reds about how he feels like he feels like it wasn't a return to form from him after a miserable 2015. He feels like he's 2016. He feels like he's taking a step that he never even knew how to take before, kind of thing. Like he feels like he's on the verge of a real breakout.
Which sounds like a rom-com. Like he's
does it?
He's taking a step he never. He seems like he's jumping into love, head first.
Yeah, like a tagline for a rom-com. I see where you're going with that. I'm not adding Leak, but I thought it was interesting, and let's see what happens next.
All right, and there are a couple guys here that could have good, like Jason Vargas could have a good year, right? And
yeah, could in like a
deep league could, sense,
like yeah. like a streamer type of way. I could see Jason Vargas becoming a streamer.
And I think Wei-Yin Chen, like, I don't understand how Wei-Yin Chen was so bad last year with the Marlins. He was a solid mid-threes ERA guy with Baltimore. He went to a better park and he had a terrible year. So I'm hoping Chen can at least be, you know, a guy that should be owned in 20 to 30% of leagues. And maybe in deep leagues you keep an eye on Chen. I don't know. And emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We'll finish with your emails. Real quick here, this is from Ben. Ben said, I'm trying to sort out if my brother ripped off his wife with a trade in our head-to-head points league. At his suggestion, she gave up Francisco Lindor for his Chris Archer and Dansby Swanson. Is that kosher?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable trade. I'd take the Lindor side 8 times out of 10, probably. But, I mean, Archer's borderline ace. And Dansby Swanson's an upside shortstop, so I don't think it's a bad trade.
I will say, if this league is for money, then you might have a watchful eye on those two all year long.
I will also say that I did manage to make a team with the name Dansby Samsonite, as I promised. This is from Chris. Oh, this is an Archie Bradley question, so we already answered it. This is from Antoine. 10-team head-to-head categories league. It's and a 12-team head-to-head points league. He needs catcher replacements for Sanchez. Cameron Rupp, Soto, McCann, Walters, Cervelli, or Norris?
I assume that's James McCann. My choice would be Rupp.
Mine would be Rupp as well.
If it were Brian McCann, you would go with Brian, right?
Yes.
And, okay, good job. This is from Rich in St. Pete, Florida. Dear Benny, Scott, Ham, and Hercules.
That's the Sandlot.
It is the Sandlot. Who's Hercules in the Sandlot?
The dog.
The dog! I'm having trouble making pitching decisions. I play in a weekly 14-team points league, and I can't decide whether or not I should drop a guy I like for a guy I might not like but has 2 starts. Should I be content to start a 1-start Jason Hamill or drop him for Willy Peralta, sorry. Should I drop Hamill, Eduardo Rodriguez, or Joe Musgrove for a 2-start Willy Peralta?
I don't think so, no.
I would not.
I guess I'm the only one who likes Willy Peralta.
Yep.
No, I could see how he could become good, but he's not there yet. And I think one of his 2 starts is against the Cubs, I think.
No, Reds and Blue Jays on the road.
Okay, Blue Jays is probably what I was thinking. It wasn't a good one.
Yeah, and the Reds might not be a good start. Like, the Reds are hit or miss. They could really bop sometimes. Robert in New Jersey, grade the trade. 8-team, 5x5 league. Give AJ Pollock. Get Danny Duffy.
F.
F? Man, you're so polar with your grades. There's a full spectrum of grades to hand
Scott,
out. It doesn't have to be A+ or F. This isn't a pass or fail course.
If I was grading your draft and you took Danny Duffy at the start of the 3rd round, I'd give you an F for that too.
I think that's a little harsh, but I'll go D+.
D+? That's almost a C. It's almost a brick deal.
I have to save the F for even. I promise you, we'll get worse deals than this.
That's there can be more than one F. We're not grading on a curve where there's only one F all year round.
Yeah, like a 50 is an F, and so is a 10.
I would be sending an email to the commissioner saying, I'm sorry, I was drunk. Can we please take the trade back?
Like, okay. I mean, Danny Duffy's really good. I wouldn't take him next to where I took AJ Pollock, but, you know, needs change. Even a week into the season needs change. And sometimes you have to act in desperation.
And Dave says,
Oh, read the names.
Hey, Jack, Chrissy, and Janet.
Come and knock on my door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
Would you drop Devin Travis for Yonhervis Solarte?
Yes.
You with the singing. Yes, I would do that also.
And John in Boston is in an OBP, an extra base hit league. Who's better to roster, Josh Bell or Yuri Gurriel?
Bell.
Keep an eye on Bell. He's doing a little bit better lately. He says he's coming out of it. They seem to be a little optimistic in Pittsburgh. Just keep an eye on him. Not quite ready to drop him yet. Gurriel, though, Gurriel's not even playing every day, so...
By the way, how amazing is Corey Seager? 2 years in, first 2 years of his career, just no spring training, and he rolls right into the season like he's an MVP candidate. It's amazing. It's like, guy's a natural.
Yeah, he's quite good. I'd like to see him do it away from Coors. That's it for the show today. We're back tomorrow. Goodbye.